Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard, and normally Pam Caldwell, but Pam is actually away today sitting her citizenship test to become an Australian citizen, so she won't be joining me today. But wow, today's episode, I can't even begin to explain how inspired I feel right now by this incredible conversation that you're about to listen to. Amanda Blesing is somebody I've followed on LinkedIn for a number of years now, and she is all about women empowerment, all about women leadership. If you are somebody working in an organization right now and you don't feel like you're being seen, heard, you want to get a promotion, but you don't know how to go about asking for that promotion, or you just want to step up into a leadership role, please listen to this. If you are somebody in a HR position or a high capacity position and you want to improve your diversity and make your workforce more inclusive for women, please listen to this. There are so many valuable takeaways, and I cannot wait for you to listen to this episode today. Please, before you do, hit that subscribe button, and if you found this podcast useful today, please share it, because it all helps to spread the message about the work that we are doing at the Sisterhood Club. And I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Hello and welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we empower women with all the tools they need to succeed across life, business and career. We'll bring inspiring stories and practical advice from CEOs, founders and women who are achieving incredible things. So join us and let's shape our futures together. Amanda, welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast. It's an absolute honor to have you on today. I know this conversation is going to be really insightful and I'm sure extremely valuable for everyone who's listening. But before we begin, could you take us back with a little bit of introduction to who you are, your journey, and what brought you here today? Over to you.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here. Just like you have the Sisterhood Club, I have my She Suite Club. They warm the cockles of my heart and keep me firing up. But my own journey, it wasn't a single moment, you know, why I got into doing what I was doing, why I perhaps was a little bit more ambitious than some. It wasn't a single moment. It was a lot of moments over time. And I perhaps used an activity that various coaches recommend, and I used an activity called a lifeline, and I drew my lifeline and actually circled or wrote down, documented moments in my life that stood out, like just strong memories. And one of the strong memories was when I went to boarding school, because I grew up on a farm. Hello to any women who grew up on farms, or anyone who grew up on a farm listening to this podcast. But I grew up on a farm, and we didn't sort of notice the difference. The boys and girls did everything the same. You know, we were all out tearing around on the farm equipment and out in the paddocks. I was a girly girl, but despite that, I still was out there shifting sheep and doing what farm kids do. So I didn't really notice a difference. But it was when I went to boarding school, because I grew up on a farm, and you know, that's education opportunities were perhaps a little bit different. So I went to boarding school. And I noticed that I was a bit different. One, I was really shy and perhaps less well socially developed. But two, my parents treated me like an equal, not as a kid. My dad used to write letters to me addressed to Ms. Amanda Blesing. And I took great pride in that, to get my letter at boarding school every week. My dad used to write to me weekly, and there was a letter addressed to Ms. and Amanda Blesing. And that was just so exciting. And I think set the cornerstone for me, for my, I guess, more feminist ideas and equity agenda. But it was only when I did the career lifeline that I unpacked that moment. And I went, oh, that was a real switch on moment when I receiving those letters from my dad addressed to Ms. Amanda Blesing. There was another moment where he introduced me to an amazing woman who had a career in government, but she was the then economic agricultural advisor to the premier of the state. One, I didn't know there were jobs like that. Two, it never occurred to me that women could hold them, because my role models had been so limited, you know, to farmers' wives, school teachers, nurses, women who worked in shops and receptionists, etc. So I didn't have a range of really varied role models. But it was, as I said, it was like these moments that I had like aha moments doing my lifeline. And I'm like, yeah, this is stuff I can really sink my teeth into. So there I was, I'd finished up being the CEO of an organization in my own career. I worked in the nonprofit sector, associations in particular. My last role was CEO of Soak Up Australia. And I was looking for something that I could be hungry about for the next decade or so. And I found it in doing this activity, a career or significant moment lifeline. So if you haven't done one for yourself, I highly recommend it. And to any of your listeners listening now, do that, because and interpreting the lifeline is so much fun. And it might be that you find your next iteration for your career for your next decade and beyond.
I love the idea of a career lifeline and also just a lifeline in general, because I've always thought about this, that a lot of our past behaviors, our past experiences really shape who we are. And I think there's an opportunity in there to look at the things that have gone well and those really sort of like pivotal moments, but also look back and go, that was a really challenging time in my life. And how did I overcome that? Because I think that's also what builds this resilience and this self-belief of like, wow, I got through that. And wow, I did that. And what I've realized is that it's in the times when I've been under extreme pressure and struggle that I have discovered things about myself that have given me then this sense of like self-esteem to be like, Georgie, if you can get through that, you can get through this. So I love the idea of people, it's almost like that self-reflection. I think we don't do this enough, right? So if I always like to think of someone listening to this and they go, okay, Amanda, I really want to do this lifeline. But what if they're sort of sat there and they're going, you know, I don't know if I've had enough life experience, or, you know, how you're now doing what you're doing, Amanda, like, but, you know, where do I begin? Like, how should they start sort of unpacking that sort of lifeline? And do they just go back in terms of past experience, or do they map out maybe where they want to be in 5 or 10 years? Like, how would you coach someone to go about that?
Well, I think the two are very different, and really both are valid activities. So that the career lifeline or timeline, you might want to call it, but the career lifeline, that's a great significant moment lifeline. Happiness moment lifeline, you might want to look at when you were most happy. So there's different variations of that. And I actually write about those activities and those tactics in my first book, Step Up, Speak Out, Take Charge, A Woman's Guide to Getting Ahead in Her Career. So those are really valuable activities. But the activity you just mentioned, like mapping out the next 5 to 10 years, that is so powerful. Did you know that most women don't, in actual fact, have a career strategy? We're really good at doing work well, rigorously, properly, thoroughly, because we're socialized to be really thorough, conscientious, considerate, and compliant in our approach to tackling a job. We're really good at having an identity outside of work, or women tend to do that better. We've been encouraged to, because perhaps work wasn't that satisfying and we weren't getting what we needed out of work. So we've been encouraged to have an identity outside of work. And we all know how healthy that is. It's really important. But what we haven't had, so if you picture three circles, that, you know, one was work, one was identity outside of work. What we haven't been encouraged to have is that career strategy. I don't even mean you might not have sat down and mapped out a plan. I mean just even ideas about mapping out a plan or a progress or a point where you can aim to. And so young women that haven't been in the past encouraged to aim particularly high. I mean, I still meet young women who, and they talk to me sometimes about they just want to get married and have a picket fence. It's more unusual now, but it's still out there. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. That's absolutely valid. But I still think that what we're missing is a potential that we can have more than that, and we can also have a career that's meaty and juicy. So career strategy, perhaps it's an important thing to think about and map out the next 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 years. Can I let you in on a secret? I was working with a client just yesterday, a lovely client, younger woman. We've been working together for some years. And about a year ago, she came to me and she just got the fire. All of a sudden, she was really switched on about what was possible. She'd been bypassed for a promotion that she thought was hers. She thought she had it in the bag. And we know that, you know, men are promoted on their potential and women are promoted on their track record. So she didn't have a, in actual fact, she did have a great track record, but her people leader couldn't see her potential to get to the next level, even though she'd been told she was a high performer. So she was on fire and she came to me and we worked out her plan for the next 10 years. And this is really important because a year later, we revisited that plan, and what we discovered, she'd already achieved her 3-year goal in 1 year. She'd already achieved her 3-year, and so we were able to bring it all forwards and start going, you were underestimating what was possible. Let's bring it forwards and let's see now what you're aiming for and how you're going to get there. So it's very, very exciting. Map out the next 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Be sure to put in your why. Because that's really important, because when times are tough, you need a really big why to drive you and keep you motivating, to keep you motivated. So that's really important. But be sure to put in your why, what you want to be doing, why you want to do it, how you're going to get there, who is going to help you, what are the gaps in your current experience that you might need to go out and get some experience in so you too can be promoted on a track record and potential. And finally, what's the money you want to earn? Because if we don't know what we're aiming for, how will we know when we get there or even if we're on the right track? So having a plan is really important.
Yeah, that is just such solid advice. And it's not something that women or girls often hear. I never heard that when I was growing up. And you talked about something really important I want to go back to, because I think this is also part of the issue in our society, is that whole role model. And I think that this is where I really want to get to. I want to see more women in leadership roles, more women in CEO roles, more women raising the roof and showing people what's possible, because then that younger generation can go, wow, well, if she can do it, I can do it. And then we then don't limit ourselves with our goals and our, you know, what we want to achieve, because we think, well, I want to be like that person, or I want to follow in her career path. So this is again, such a important topic. But like, in terms of that role models, right? Like when you sort of look for people to be role models, like how could people approach that? Because, you know, I think the power of a mentor, the power of your work as a coach is so important. So how important do you think is having a role model, and what have you experienced in your own sort of career? If you looked up for someone before, and how has that impacted your sort of career, I guess, in general?
Role models are so important, aren't they? And I think what I love about women like former New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, what a great role model. Whether you agree with her politics or not, it was her leadership that counted, her legacy of kindness, her, she had a baby when she was a prime minister, and, you know, it was unheard of. Like, she's really raised the bar and changed the landscape, and I think changed things for so many women about what's possible, changed our expectations. That's why having role models are so important. So people you can admire and inspire you on your journey and help you be better or do things differently. That's the power of role models. I mentioned that woman earlier, didn't I? From when I was a teenager, and that woman that I met, who was the agricultural economic advisor to the former premier of the state where I grew up, which blew my mind. But she was my first real, true, I guess, role model that I chose for myself, because she was professional. And I remember she said to me, if I don't have a baby by this age, I'm going to go out and have one on my own. Like, she was blowing my mind in so many ways. I was an impressionable 16-year-old. And she was a role model for me for so many years. Interestingly, later in my career, I didn't have female role models, and that would be something that I would, I think, was absolutely missing. I didn't have a career strategy. I just sort of had a hunger. I didn't really have a plan, and I didn't really have the support I think perhaps I would have gone even further in terms of my, you know, corporate career if I'd had role models and the support you really need. Role models are amazing, and go out and find one now, even if it's just someone that you admire from afar. Read about them, listen to their podcasts, find people you admire who help you expand beyond your comfort zone. A comfort zone is a really restrictive little box. It's nice, it's comfy, it's cozy, but it really is quite a box. As soon as you're comfortable, it's time to get new role models, and role models will help you expand the box that you live in so that you can shift to the next level.
I completely agree. And I love what you just said then as well, is like, if you can't find one in your current organization, or there's no one that you sort of know within your inner circle, look to online, you know, go and get a coach, go and get a mentor, listen to good podcasts. That's literally how, I guess, I began in my personal journey, just, you know, finding these amazing women who were using their voices and were speaking out about things that maybe I hadn't thought about or were even aware of. And I was like, wow, okay, I love the way that she just spoke. I love the way she just said that. And it really had a huge impact on my life. And now this is why I'm so passionate about women empowerment, women speaking up, women being encouraged to use their voice. You know, we all have a voice. We just need to be encouraged to use it. And that brings me on, I guess, nicely now to a lot of the content that you post about is very much about, you know, how can women be seen, be heard, be promoted, and be unapologetic, basically, so they can be promoted and work their way up in their career. I honestly believe that when I reflect on my own personal career, it was the women leaders that were the best. They encouraged me. They got the best out of me. I felt comfortable going to them and speaking to them about personal matters. They really did push me to be the best version of myself. And I think it is just so tragic that there is not enough women leaders in these big organizations. And I often look at the, you know, go onto the website and I go, oh yeah, just faces of middle-aged white men. And I really want to change that, to be honest. That really bugs me. And even like on the whole, you know, when we talk about like panels and getting women on more panels, I'm like, I don't just want to be the token female on the panel anymore. Like, I want to be there because I deserve to be there as much as, you know, these five men. So how can we, you know, really start? So, okay, I'm a business now and I'm listening to this and I'm a business owner. I'm thinking, okay, Georgie and Amanda, I want to start promoting women. But, you know, one, there's not maybe enough women in my organizations, or, you know, I don't know if these women even want to be promoted. How can we first and foremost maybe look at like company cultures? Because I think that we need to kind of start there as well. Because I don't necessarily think it's the women that are the problem. I think it's the underlying issues in certain company cultures. So if you were a HR manager or someone in a leadership role right now, what would you be looking at to sort of make this change and impact?
So much in that question.
Sorry, I'm just throwing it at you.
That's okay. Look, let's face it, the system is broken. We've been working hard at gender equity for years and we've barely moved the dial. It's two step forward, one step back. We think we've moved gender pay gap, you know, we think it's smaller, and all of a sudden we find it's blown out again. And, you know, I think in 1975 in Australia, in some states, there was a legally mandated gender salary gap of around 25%. Well, I think the WGEA put figures out just before Christmas, and it's up to 22%. So we haven't moved the dial very far in a very long time. We need to be doing things differently. And I think that historically programs have been around, let's encourage women, let's build women's confidence, let's give them more tactics. And those things are great, but they're not going to move the dial, especially if the culture of the organization, the embedded bias, the notion of meritocracy, all those things are quite flawed. And especially if the incumbent, you know, the people who are in the organization are, you know, a certain demographic, possibly male, pale and stale, when they don't see themselves in the people coming through the ranks, they don't promote those people. You know, we promote people who are a little bit like us. So the cards are stacked against women. But does this mean we shouldn't try? Absolutely not. Because when women lead equally with men, the organizations perform better in terms of profitability, productivity, risk and compliance, keeping out of trouble, customer satisfaction, and staff satisfaction and engagement. Like, these are really big dial movers. These are really big for companies. But when, as I said, it seems to be two steps forwards, one step back. So the first thing, if you're inside an organization and you're HR, is you've got to get the leadership team on board. Yes, you can be doing lots of stuff, but you've got to be looking at systems, processes, policies, and strategies that start at the top. Because it doesn't matter how good your women are, if they don't feel wanted, they will pick up their bat, ball, and briefcase and go elsewhere. And we're seeing in the latest McKinsey Lean In report at the end of 2022 that senior level women are leaving organizations in droves, far greater numbers than they've done before. And this is a huge drain of talent from corporates who are trying to attract and retain talent. So as I said, two steps forward, one step backwards. But we've got to start with the policies because it's not the women's fault. And that's got to start first. A couple of really easy things. Say you're a manager and you're trying to really encourage the women in your team to speak up. One of the biggest things is assuming. Sometimes we as managers assume we know what women want. And that's a big no-no. Instead, ask what women want. Be sure to ask, engage them in conversation. And sometimes women go, oh, I'm not really sure if I'm ready for that promotion. Okay, as a manager, you might need to tease that out because the woman has been socialized to second guess herself, hesitate, appear not so confident. So as a manager, you might need to tease that out in a woman if she's hesitating and might need to go back to her in a few weeks and say, you know, have a think about that promotion. I think you're ready to apply for it. Have a think about it and come back to me next week once you've had a chance to talk about it with some people. And the other thing would be fear to share policies because often female voice is not heard. You know, we have a higher voice and perhaps that's not normal in terms of what male managers or other, even women, they're not used to hearing people in authority with higher voices. So we don't credit them with big ideas and good ideas. So if you're a manager and you're trying to make a difference, implement a fair air to share policy so that everyone gets an equal say in meetings about new initiatives, has a seat at the table, so that everyone gets a say in terms of decision, or at least everyone gets a chance to have a say and be heard when it comes to decision making. So there's just two easy ideas because I think sometimes all the ideas are so big that we don't know what to do. Like, how do I implement a policy or a strategy? That's too big and it's sort of at an enterprise level. But you can start small with your department and you can start insisting on equity right now.
So much value in that. And I really hope that people listening are making notes because that is just absolute gold nuggets in there. And that's the thing. It's like people think they've got to have these big strategies and look, we can't do this until we've got that in place. But actually it can just start by just making sure everyone in that room is having a say, is having a voice. And that when that person is speaking, we listen. Mm. We don't cut in, we don't push down, we listen. Mm. And I was also reading Amanda as well, which was really shook me to my core, was that, you know, we have gone backwards and it's really sad because I'm sure you're aware that during the pandemic, there was also a lot of women that left the workforce because of the extra pressure of homeschooling, taking care of the house. And then on top of all of that, they were still, you know, expected to perform the way they were performing, you know, prior to the pandemic. And it actually caused so much stress and burnout that women were actually like, I give up, I can't do it all. So they've actually left the workforce. Now, my concern is that for those children that have witnessed their mum now sort of maybe staying at home, not going to work, you know, that's going to become their norm again. And we're actually going to go backwards in society, not forward, because I think it's really important. I know for me, I watched my mum go to work, and that was a really big thing in my world. Now, had I have watched, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, but I'm just saying, like, that would have been my norm if she had stayed at home as well. So my concern is that we're going to go backwards if we don't encourage women to enter the workforce, be promoted within the workforce. This is the issues that we need to be addressing. And one of the key issues that I see is that women, we're not encouraged the way that men are. And you said something when I was reading your content about this whole like self-promotion and how the women are, we're a lot more reserved. We don't want to be seen to be like overly confident, or, you know, just like, because that's not how we've been brought up. We're, you know, seen, not heard, quiet, good girl. So how can women, and I'm thinking of like women that I've met in organizations that are quite naturally shy, and they're just sort of trying to find their voice. Where can they begin? You know, if they're sat around a boardroom and they don't feel confident speaking up or saying something, where should that woman begin being seen, being heard, and being valued in the organization?
Oh, you're getting onto my favorite topic, which is self-promotion. I wrote a book on the topic. Yes. So there's my book, Invisible.
Yes, I know.
Invisible to Invincible.
Research, and I want to get that book.
Yeah, Invisible to Invincible. I'm just about to release the second edition. I've been to-ing and fro with my editor. You know, I hate weekend work, but sometimes you've got to do it. So all last week and over the weekend, to-ing and fro-ing with my editor, I want to launch a second edition, because there's been so much research in recent years since I wrote that. Also, the landscape has changed because COVID has really we now have more hybrid working opportunities, and we need to factor that in, because it's very easy to blend into the background or become less visible working from home. And so I want to make sure that while women are, that might be a great way to manage your work-life balance, etc., but if you're less visible, you're less promotable. And so that's something we need to manage. So that's why I'm relaunching the book. Plus, there was a bunch of new content that I added, a whole new level for my clients, and I wanted to share that with the world more broadly. So one of the things women can do to make sure they're heard in meetings. So recent research tells us that women who surround themselves with a cohort of like-minded women do better than women who surround themselves with men or mixed gender groups. So basically, if you're a woman, network with and find a cohort of like-minded, career-minded women who are your people, and you will support each other to get ahead. And you can do this in a formal way, informal way. You can find your tribe or club or whatever it is, but find some women who inspire you to be better, who lift your gaze, who give you tips on how to navigate bias, or how to feel heard, or how to get promoted, or how to get that next pay rise. Find women to support you. It's really, really important. The other thing too, and this is really tactical or practical for feeling or being heard in meetings, and form a coalition. So, and several of our politicians have been publicly stated that they did this. And here in Australia, we've got former Foreign Minister Julie Bishop. And she was in government in the leading party, but she was only one of three women. One of three women, and yes, it was in recent history. Horrendous. However, but what she used to do was, because she and her peers often felt like they were spoken over, so they formed what we call a coalition. And so they just knew that if one of them spoke up with an idea in parliament or a meeting or something like that, and one of the others was in the room with them, the other person would say, yes, yes, Julie, can you say that again? I'm not sure everyone was listening. Or, yes, Julie, I really liked the way you said this. But they did it for each other. It wasn't just all about Julie. They did it for each other. So they echoed each other's sentiments. They drew attention to when one of the women spoke out to ensure that women's voice was heard. Do you have to only have women in your coalition? No. There is no evidence to suggest only women need to be in your coalition. You might partner up with a male peer on this one. It could be that there's two or three of you, you go to a particular meeting, you're always a bit shy. So you might say to, two or three of them, I've got this idea. Sometimes I find it hard to be heard in a meeting. If I signal you and I start speaking and you notice people speaking on over the top of me, would you just help me command the floor? So form a coalition and you can help the other person too so that you each get fair air to share and basically so your opinion is heard. Coalitions are great, but it does take you being proactive, strategic, and you need to make things happen. You need to do this for yourself.
It's the ultimate sisterhood club there. You know, like just women coming together, women supporting each other, women collaborating over competition. Because I actually got challenged the other day and I was thinking as you were speaking then, because I've always been a champion of other women. I've just always wanted to see other women do well, succeed in their careers. But I also identify with a couple of things that have been said about women, you know, almost competing with one another in the workplace and women just trying to, yeah, just sort of like put other women down to get ahead. And I feel crushed when I hear that because very gratefully, I've not ever come across that, you know, like, you know, my college years, you know, you'd have a little bit of bitchiness there and stuff. But since I've entered the working world, gratefully, I haven't come across that too much. Maybe because I've also worked in male-dominated environments, but, you know, some women have said to me, you know, actually it's the men that have supported me more than my female colleagues, which is really sad. I think that is heartbreaking, actually. Why do you think that is? Why are some women competing with one another? Is it because we think there's not enough positions, you know, at the table? What's your thoughts on that?
There's so much research on this one, and it is a shame, isn't it? I think the world is a bit addicted to the notion of a cat fight. Yeah. I remember in Australia during COVID, the media just kept pitting a couple of our premiers against each other, two women premiers, and the media just kept pitting them against each other as though they were constantly fighting. I think we've got this, you know, perhaps as a society, there's something, you know, titillating about two women fighting in public because it's not ladylike,
yes,
or deemed ladylike. So it breaches the narrow stereotype norm. But in terms of one of the ideas you mentioned, fewer roles for women or scarcity of roles for women, I mean, that's a big part of it, isn't it? So if there are fewer roles for women, I wonder if that does trigger women to compete with each other. So, you know, the traditional pathways for women into the C-suite are usually something like marketing, communication, or HR. They're the traditionally available pathways to have a seat at the table. That's just three out of about 10, you know, that's not a lot. And you're competing with men in those categories as well. And we know that in female-dominated sectors, men tend to end up being paid more and end up in the leadership roles. So it's not a guaranteed pathway. So I do think there's a real merit in that argument of sort of scarcity. So we see each other as a little bit more of a threat. But let's flip that round. Empowered women empower other women. We need to remember that if we are supporting each other to get there, it'll make the organisations we work for better. You know, if one woman gets a pay rise, that's a raise by a fraction of pay for everyone. You know, if we all negotiate for a raise, we're raising the standard, raising the bar everywhere for women to getting more money, to get promotions. It's really, really important that we think of it like it's a collective. You know, we're all in this together rather than competing with each other. Because when we compete with each other, we're in actual fact just going back to that. We're really making it easy for the patriarchy to continue. So, you know, you used a phrase before. It was, you know, collaborate, don't compete. And I really think that's just so powerful. Hard to do in the moment when you're feeling like that's the only promotion opportunity I've got, so I've got to really keep down my competition. Hard to do in the moment, perhaps, but developing the self-awareness that scarcity mindset, you might need to embrace an abundance mindset, and it will help you through that more easily.
Yeah. That word, self-awareness, it's something that, you know, I wish everyone would work on continuously, because when you are self-aware of your own thoughts and your own feelings, you can navigate these tricky situations so much better. And like you said, coming at it from an abundant mindset versus a scarcity mindset is also so important. I want to touch on promotions now, because I know that, you know, a lot of women approach me quite a lot and say to me, how can I go about asking for a promotion? You know, and it's sad that obviously they have to ask, right? But you know, that is the reality, unfortunately. A lot of people do have to say, you know, I've been working here for a number of years, da da da, like, you know, Big Bob just got promoted, like, you know, why haven't I? So what's your advice to women that want to tackle the promotion issue that we're currently facing?
All right. Basically, if you don't ask, you won't get. If you don't ask, the answer will always be no. Unless you work in the most enlightened work environment in the world, where promotions are just, you know, handed out on time in the organisation, you know, and other people noticing your results. But it's not the case. Our results don't speak for themselves, and the people who are doing getting promoted are probably asking for it. And one of the biggest mistakes I see women making, and partly because of the way we socialize, socialized to wait until we've been noticed. We're socialized to wait. So one of the biggest mistakes is that we actually don't plan for the promotion early enough or plant the seed with our boss early enough. And I encourage 3 to 6 months. So, you know, dropping a hint that you're looking for a pay rise, at performance appraisal time, if not before, planting the seed about the results that you've actually delivered. And did you know I've actually, you know, these 10 sales I made, actually, that's more than the division made last year in the same period of time. So I just wanted to let you know that this is how I'm tracking. And by the way, just to let you know, I'm looking for a promotion. You know, I'd love to have a conversation with you about a promotion in a few months' time. Another question you might ask is, what would it take for you to consider me ready for a promotion in 3 months' time? What do I need to be doing to prove to you I'm ready? So we can be asking our boss in the 6 months prior to the promotion, which basically is more likely to guarantee you're going to get one. As I said, if you don't ask, you won't get, because the answer will always be no.
Solid advice there. And again, hope everyone's taking notes, because that was phenomenal. I wish I knew that when I wanted a promotion, because maybe I would have got it. But I want to talk to you now, Amanda, about the incredible work that you're doing with the She Suite Club. I saw you're running a retreat, which is very exciting. So how did that idea come about? Because I also read you've been in business now for 8 years, which is absolutely incredible. So I hope that you are celebrating that, because most businesses finish within, you know, I think it's 5 years, or maybe even most don't even like get past two. So the fact that you've been doing this now for 8 years is absolutely exceptional. So you must be extremely good at what you do. And from just speaking to you on this podcast, I have no doubt about that. So talk to me about, how did She Suite come about? And yeah, sort of where do you want to go with that? Because I imagine it gives you so much fuel and passion, but where did the idea come from, and what's your mission and your why with it as well?
Yeah. So thank you. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I could probably talk with a mouthful of marbles underwater about gender equity, femme empowerment, why it. I do what I do. That's what happens when you find your why. That's what happens.
Yes.
You know, it makes you maybe a really boring dinner guest, but
not at all. You can come round to my house for dinner any day of the week.
So I love what I do. And when I launched my business, I launched myself as a one-on-one coach. I'd worked my way through the ranks of the association sector myself, you know, with my last role being a CEO. And so I launched myself as someone who was skilled at helping women navigate their career, women in particular, because that was my passion. And that was where I felt I had a lot of value to add. And that was just over 8 years ago now. So yes, I've just celebrated 8 years in business. And you're absolutely right. It is a big milestone. Not a lot of businesses actually survive past the 8 years. But right now I could never, I don't like saying this out loud too much, you know, touch wood, but I don't want to go back to working for anyone else, because I love working for myself. And I think there's a lot of women out there finding out how nice it is to, you know, how good it is When you've got some drive, when you've got some passion, you've got some strategy and you get good advice, how great it is to run your own business. But this one-on-one work, it's amazing and so rewarding, but there's only so much you can do. You just can't spread yourself thin enough in order to help the numbers of women who really want help. And so during COVID, when the pandemic and lockdown, you know, the women who really needed my help, and sometimes I do webinars, and so I meet a lot of women, and sometimes corporates bring me in to run workshops online with groups of women, or councils were bringing me in to inspire their constituents and the women in their and constituents who had perhaps found themselves out of work. And so I was meeting a lot of women who, one, couldn't afford to work with me one-on-one, and two, had never ever thought about a one-on-one coach because I'd never thought that that was an option. And three, were feeling isolated. That's where the C-Suite Club was born. I went, I want to create a place where women can get together and support each other. And that's really important. And it's one of the criteria to being a member of the club. You've got to be, you know, personality's got to be part of it. We've got to be in it for the, you know, empowered women empower other women. So that's one of the mandates. If you breach those conditions, out. if you're seen to breach that sort of a condition. But so empowered women empower other women. I wanted to bring together a bunch of women. I want to grow the number of women I can work with on a daily, weekly, monthly, annual basis. I want to be able to help more women. So what I did was I unpacked everything I do with one woman as a client and then with groups of women through the corporates. And I've unpacked that and I've actually created an amazing curriculum inside the club, which takes women, I call it a career success roadmap, which takes women through step by step all the various stages from my book and from the coaching program that help them shift the dial on their career, pay rises, promotions, and recognition, learning how to say no, setting up boundaries, learning how to deal with rejection, interview tactics, negotiation, preparing for interviews, everything. It's all there in one place. We're guided. There's heaps of videos. There's women going through it. I've got a group of about eight women going through the program right now who are supporting each other. It's amazing. So that's why I do what I do, because it's heartwarming for me and is getting results from my clients, and I get to work with more women at the same time. So that's why I do what I do.
Incredible. And what a mission, what a why. And I think one thing I've learned in my career is that if you don't feel excited about the purpose and the mission, you're never going to give it your all. You're never going to, you know, get out of bed and want to get to your desk every day and want to do something. So the fact that you've found something that you're just so inspired by and passionate about is just incredible. And I think as well, like I'm very passionate about women entrepreneurship and women going into business and women discovering their true potential. What sort of lessons have you learned over the last 8 years in business? And if you sort of could go back to, you know, Amanda 8 years ago, what would you say to her at the start of her journey? Because I think that's how we can always teach others from our own experience as well.
Yes, wisdom is an interesting thing, isn't it? One of the things I have learned is that you get confident, increasingly confident as you mature. So we know from research that women in particular, they grow in confidence, like, you know, there's a spike of confidence when you're younger, and then because of life responsibilities and mortgages and child rearing and career responsibilities, our confidence sort of wanes. And maybe it's because we're being demonstrated to or repeatedly shown that we are less than, not good enough, by society, by advertising, and by the workplaces that we work in who don't promote us, and which causes us to feel like we have to jump through hoops. But what's interesting is around the age of 50, your confidence will balloon. So if you're not yet 50, you've got lots to look forward to. Booming confidence is amazing. And at age of 55, apparently female confidence overtakes that of men. So it's a great place to be. Don't be scared of getting older. Yeah, I can't remember where I was going with that.
No, but I just want to say actually that fills me with so much excitement, because I think, you know, on the flip side of that, you know, women as they age, I think with some women can really get down about that. I remember vividly a bit of a trauma from my childhood. Sorry, Mum, but Mum hit 40. And I don't know what happened to her, but I remember on her 40th birthday, she locked herself in a bedroom, wouldn't come out because she was so devastated that she'd hit her 40s. And I was like, that is to be celebrated, you know, because like you said, you know, you're getting more wise, you're boosting your confidence. But do you think that you have grown in confidence because you have progressed in your career and that you have had a level of success? Or do you think it's the same if you're a woman that maybe has been in a career where she hasn't been promoted, hasn't felt that she's had the opportunity? Do you think that would be the same for that woman? Curious.
Yeah. I think I am speaking from a place of privilege. You know, I have been relatively successful in my career. There is something that comes from overcoming adversity. There is something amazing, and we referred to it earlier in the podcast, but there is something that is amazing about overcoming obstacles and proving that you can despite the odds. That you know, you're harassed or you're kept down or you are not given the opportunities the same as your male peer, but proving them wrong anyway. There is something that is amazing about that. Yeah, it's tough and yeah, it's not for you, but do it anyway because it's great. Now, I think, let's face it, for your mum, she might not have had amazing female role models over 40 who she could admire. She might not have known about them. And it's only relatively recently that we read case studies and stories around women over the age of 60 who are creating empires, huge financially successful businesses, and they're, you know, perhaps really getting into it in their 60s. So I think our notion as society still thinks that older women, you know, they pass their use by date after the age of 50. And sometimes I'll get women coming to me and saying, am I too old to work with you, Amanda? And they're 51. And I'm thinking, I'm older than you. No, you are not. So, you know, I think society makes us feel that way. But if that's you, don't just stay there. Do the work. If you're feeling underconfident, maybe there's an underlying health issue. Maybe you're really drained. Get your mojo under control somehow and find some amazing role models, read some amazing books, listen to some amazing podcasts. And find your why. Find that thing that's going to light your fire for the next decade, at least.
Oh, God, I just love that. Because I just really hope that, like, you know, we've got a variety of women that listen to this podcast. And, you know, sometimes we're like, oh, I'm too old for all of that. And, you know, I go, absolutely not. Like, going back to my mum, her dream has always been to own her own shop. And she loves clothes. She loves fashion. I just said, Mum, you know, you're 60. Right, you're fit, you're healthy, you know, you're going to live for another 30, 40 years, right? I said, what do you want to do for that? And I was coaching my mum. She was like, you're right, maybe I should do it. You know, so I think that's it. There's no right or wrong time. And our society has a way of saying, oh, you know, past this age, you know, that's it. You should just want to retire and play golf. And I say, screw that. I don't ever intend to retire.
Or play golf.
My brother actually is a pro golfer. He's very good. And I can barely even swing the thing. So he's definitely got the talent in that department. But yeah, just such powerful advice there, Amanda. And hopefully such like advice that fuels people. So I just want to go on. We're going on so many different panels, but I love it. But how do people discover their why? Do you have a thought process, like, you know, on that? Like, because I think some people could go, oh, such great advice, like find my why, find my passion, find my purpose. But how could they sort of go about that?
You have to be on the lookout for it, don't you? You really do have to be on the lookout for it. I don't have one particular activity that's going to help you discover your why, but I have an activity that I recommend. I write about it in my books. I recommend it all the time. If you, you know, I recently had a webinar just before Christmas and I recommended it there. Like, you need to do this. You need to, it's such a powerful activity. And it's like, if you're umming and ahhing about something and you're not really sure, write down what it is, you know, I think I should take this promotion, or I think I should ask for this promotion. You know, then I want you to start writing down 45 reasons why. You're not allowed to stop before 45. I don't care how trivial those reasons are. I don't care how, if, you know, thinking, oh, I'm not sure if it's about the money because women shouldn't want more money. It's a bit greedy. No, you're allowed to ask for money in the privacy of your own journal. It's okay. You're allowed to ask for money out loud, out in public too. It's okay. It's not greedy. It's just valuing your worth. And but I want you to write down 45 reasons. That's the minimum. Keep going. Now, what's going to happen? You're probably going to write 9 reasons and then go, oh, this is really hard, because it is. I want you to take a little break and then get back to it. Keep writing your reasons why you need that promotion. And it will be amazing how that will fire you up. Then what you want to do is you want to assess it, and you want to find the reason, the really personal reason why, the reason that's, well, maybe aligned with your values, or maybe it's about family, or maybe it's something aligned with your values that's basically going to be the one reason that's going to light your fire when times are tough, because times will get tough. You might get rejected. So you need the why that's big enough to keep the wolves at bay, you know, to keep the negative fears down. And that's the why that you really cling on to. All the others are amazing and will help you, but you need to have one that's really closely aligned with your values. So I was working with a woman in the C-Suite Club just recently, and she was talking about one of her goals for the year was to lose some weight. And we had a range of reasons why, and we were doing a group coaching session. So she'd come up with a range of reasons why, and then all of a sudden she found the one that was going to help her stick to her diet for the rest of the year. And she said, it's because I want to fit into the mother of the bride dress for my daughter's wedding. I want Beautiful. To look amazing at my daughter's wedding. And it was about family. It was about being there to support her daughter. It was about looking good for her daughter. There was so much there. And she said, that's the why. She got goosebumps. She said, that's the one. That's the why. And that's what will keep me going. So that may not help you find your purpose, but it will really help light your fire. It help you when you're coming up against big decisions to work out what's going to help you, or when you're coming up to big milestones, so what's going to help you get to that next level. That's a great process.
It's such a powerful process as well. And I think that whole, when you're saying about like the obstacles, that's all part of business. That's all part of life. You can always come up against challenges and problems, but that's it. If you can identify with that why, and you hear no, or you get rejected, you're going to keep on going, because you're like, this is my mission. This is my vision. This is why I want this. And it's something that, you know, I've lived by for many, many years now. And I think your why can change as well, of course. You know, we don't just have one why, it can constantly change. When I was in my 20s, my why was I wanted to buy my first house. When I was, you know, now in my 30s, my why is that I want to have impact. I want to be doing things that actually matter and feel like I'm contributing to society, as opposed to just, you know, building a business just for me. I want to do it feeling like I'm doing it for other people as well. So that brings us back to that question about, you know, going back to C-Suite, which is where I want to sort of end this podcast. But the biggest sort of advice that you'd give to yourself that when you first started your business, what would you have said to Amanda when she was first starting out?
Yeah, back yourself. Totally back yourself. Like, I designed my own website. I did everything all myself. And that's smart in terms of finance, but it made everything slow to get started. So I think that maybe I needed a mid-ground. I needed to assess, what did I need when I first get started? You know, and what am I going to need? And then work out, well, where's my time best spent? So because my time might be best spent on crafting those messages and sending out blogs, I could pay to get my website redesigned on Fiverr when you first start. So that was the big lesson for me. It was back myself. I wasn't 100% committed. I was to some degree, but I wasn't. I always had, like, I could always go back to work. For the first 6 months, I had that as I can always go back to work. I'd always go, possibly a, you know, I know I've thrown it all in, my ego's involved here. I can always go back though if I had to. I think that's not 100% committed. And I recently read and I blogged about a quote from Martina Navratilova, an amazing tennis player. And she talks about commitment like this, or she used a quote and it went like this. Commitment is like ham and eggs. While the chicken is committed, the pig is all in. All right. So because the chicken just donated or gave the egg, whereas the pig had to die for the cause. There's a little bit where we're committed. When I first started my business, I wasn't actually all in. I was hedging my bets, and I'd say go all in a little bit sooner. It would make it a lot easier.
Yeah, back yourself. That's something that is so important. And again, I don't think that message is reinforced enough. And, you know, because I think you've got to be your biggest cheerleader. You really have. And I think, you know, we can't rely on our external world to find that sort of motivation and drive. That comes from within. And if you can tap into that, that's where the power source really lies. But Amanda, I could speak to you honestly all day. You would be certainly someone I'd invite around for dinner, and I would never get bored of this conversation. So, you know, the invite's there. But where can people find you? Where can we send people to find out more about She Suite Club? Where can we send people?
Cool. Well, I've got a website, amandablessing.com. It's a blessing in disguise. So there's only one S in blessing. It's a typical typo. You can find me on Amazon with my book, Invisible to Invincible, a self-promotion handbook for women. It became an Amazon bestseller in the careers section in 2019. And as I said, I'm about to launch the second edition. If you've got the Kindle version, I believe you get the updated version automatically straight to your Kindle device. Don't wait, just get it now. But my website's probably the best place, along with LinkedIn. I'm a bit of a LinkedIn ninja. You can't teach self-promotion without nailing your social media platform of choice. And LinkedIn is my platform of choice. And that's where most corporate women hang out. So that's where I play, I role model, I won a LinkedIn award for my voice. It's where I distribute content really generously. So get in there and find me on LinkedIn.
Amanda, thank you so much. And I just want to say that in terms of a role model for women, you are definitely one of them. And if you don't follow Amanda on LinkedIn, I highly recommend that you do, because your posts are extremely inspiring, thought-provoking, and certainly on topics that I think need to be discussed more often in our society. So thank you for coming on the Sister Club podcast today. And for those of you that have been listening, and I really hope that you got a lot from this. I know I did. And I look forward to, you know, speaking with you a lot more, Amanda. So thank you very much. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.